You're listening to the new WGXC local news show All Together Now. Today we'll hear Chris Gibson explain why he's not running for governor. We'll hear from the Caro Town Board about why they're not putting a moratorium on solar panels in Caro. We'll listen to the sounds of Verizon striking in Greenport. And we'll hear reports from Ulster County, Catskill, Kinderhook, Albany, Coxsackie, Athens, along the Hudson River, Caro, and Manhattan on All Together Now today.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. At the top of the news, Governor Andrew M. Cuomo's office on Monday, May the 2nd, announced $3 million in grant awards for new projects to help communities improve recreation access and protect water quality, conserve open space, and increase storm resiliency in the Hudson River Estuary watershed. Among the grants awarded locally were $20,000 to the City of Hudson to produce a natural resources inventory and conservation plan to guide land use decisions. It will be used to revise the city's existing zoning ordinance to help conserve green space, reduce stormwater, promote green infrastructure strategies, protect open space and historic resources, and to develop vacant lots and brownfield areas. The city was also awarded nearly $92,000 to build and equip a riverfront information center. The center will be constructed from a recycled shipping container. It will be developed and operated by the Hudson Sloop Club. Other regional grant recipients include the Village of Rhinebeck, Town of Red Hook, Bard College, and Riverkeeper. A total of $1.76 million in Hudson River Estuary grants were awarded to 36 projects. An additional $1.25 million is now available for organizations and municipalities. The deadline for applications is June the 30th, 2016. You can read the full press release at governor.newyork.gov. Sal Bellalacqua is reporting in the Greene County News that Zachary Gervin of Hanacroy has achieved the rank of Eagle Scout, the highest honor bestowed by Boy Scouts. Gervin is a member of Troop 45. He is a senior at Coxsackie Athens High School and has been involved in scouting since he was in the first grade. To become an Eagle Scout, Gervin had to earn a minimum of 20 merit badges, hold various troop leadership positions, and complete a community service project. For his project, Gervin constructed a large observation deck at the Hanacroy Creek Preserve off Route 144 in the town of New Baltimore. The deck sits on the north trail of the preserve and overlooks the creek bed below. Gervin had to organize the work, lead a team of scout and parent volunteers, and oversee every detail of the project. You can read that full story in the Greene County News. Matt Hamilton is reporting at Capital Confidential that according to a Siena College poll released on Tuesday, May the 3rd, the vast majority of those interviewed said the time is now for lawmakers to address ethics reforms. The survey showed 82% of the voters believe that addressing corruption before the current session ends is very important. However, when asked if addressing corruption is more important than addressing heroin addiction or creating more affordable housing, only 30% of the voters agreed. By comparison, 23% said addressing education issues, including Common Core, is of greatest importance. And while there is consensus that corruption should be the end-of-session focus, voters are not confident that meaningful reform is coming. Siena College pollster Steve Greenberg said, and I quote, "The problem is clear, but voters don't agree on all solutions, and they are decidedly pessimistic that Cuomo and the legislature will address the corruption issue before the end of the session," end quote. The poll indicated that pension forfeiture is a popular proposed measure, saying it should apply to all state employees convicted of a crime related to their jobs, not just elected officials. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential. Roger Hannikin Gilson in the Daily Mail reports that Representative Chris Gibson won't run for governor. The three-term Kinderhook-based congressman said he accepted a teaching position at Williams College as a visiting lecturer on leadership beginning in February 2017 and will accept other academic positions. He said in a press release, and I quote, "I will not be running for governor in 2018. At the conclusion of my term in the U.S. House of Representatives, I will be leaving politics and starting this new direction with my family. In the near term, I will be closing my exploratory committee. For our donors to that committee, we will be refunding contributions we've received," end quote. Gibson is scheduled to appear in All Together Now at 6 p.m. on Thursday, May the 5th on WGXC. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Roger Hannikin Gilson writes in the Daily Mail that a replication of the studio used by artist Thomas Cole was unveiled on Sunday, May the 1st, on the grounds of the Thomas Cole National Historic Site in Catskill. The original studio was built in 1846 and stood approximately 75 yards from the house for 125 years. It was torn down in 1973 after falling into disrepair. The studio was reconstructed on the same footprint and using the same type of materials as the original. It was built to stand repair-free for 100 years, according to Melissa Galvanese, education director at the museum. Thomas Cole, the artist as architect, is currently on exhibit at the new space through October. Lectures will be hosted in the space during the winter months. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. And for our final story, the Daily Freeman is reporting that Minnewaska State Park reopened to the public on Saturday, April the 30th, a week after closing due to a blaze that burned more than 2,000 acres of the Sam's Point area of the park. However, the 5,000-acre Sam's Point section of the park will remain closed until further notice. Also this weekend, the State Department of Environmental Conservation Incident Management Team lifted a temporary flight restriction banning the flying of drones over the park. Trails connecting Minnewaska to Sam's Point will remain closed until further notice. The fire broke out on Saturday, April the 23rd, and was declared 100% contained as of 5 p.m. on Thursday, April the 28th. The cause of the fire is under investigation. The state residential brush burning ban remains in effect through May 14th. Information on trail closures at Minnewaska is available at 845-255-0752. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The rain is supposed to continue through the weekend. Wednesday morning showers are likely with a high near 56. Showers continue Wednesday night with a low around 43. Thursday, another chance of showers with a high near 59. And again Thursday night with a low around 45. Chance of showers Friday with a high near 61. It's a rainy week in WGXC land.
You are listening to the WGXC News Update. I'm Alana Medlock. The Village Board of the Village of Athens on April 27th adopted a resolution subject to a permissive referendum authorizing games of chance within the village. The resolution shall become effective by May 28th unless action is taken before then by the board or voters. The Cairo Town Board tabled a proposed solar moratorium May 2nd, saying they would tweak a bit of the language in the moratorium before another public hearing. Towns around the area are hurrying to update laws around solar arrays after state law changed May 1st. Solar companies are approaching homeowners about hosting large arrays of solar panels that feed the grid and make them money. Hudson, Catskill, Jefferson, and Schoharie County, and all of Delaware County are among the local municipalities that have passed regulations or had discussion about solar rules in the past month, and Greenville holds a special meeting on the issue May 16th. The public hearing on the issue was largely a back and forth between current supervisor Dan Benoit and former town supervisor John Coyne. Benoit opened by framing the issue.
Basically, it's the town board's understanding that there are a lot of companies called ESCOs that are going around and looking for places that they can put these solar farms on private property. When the town did its zoning law, it did not address these private solar farms. And there are a lot of fly-by-night companies that are running around and causing problems with a lot of people, tying up their property in very onerous leases that people can't get out from under. They have trouble selling their property, all sorts of issues with these things. So we decided that the best thing that we could do right now was to put a moratorium on the ability for these companies to come in and lease land and put these solar farms down until we can address this in the revised zoning law that is going to be worked on here.
So the town of Cairo, which runs its own solar farm, was deciding what's best for its citizens. That did not go down well with former town supervisor John Coyne, who has researched plans to put a solar array on his property.
Town, if this law is still in place, how can the town implement a moratorium if there's not an increase in, I'll say, demand, you know, on the building department? I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
We don't want, you know, this to become a big issue and have it out of control. But on the other hand, is it really fair to people that have done their homework, have chosen a reputable dealer, and want to move forward with it?
After more back and forth, the town tabled the issue for later, with Benoit promising another public hearing. Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that Kinderhook Republican Chris Gibson said Republicans can still win the governor's office in 2018, even if he isn't running. In his first interview with Time Warner Cable after announcing he was ending his exploratory campaign on May 2nd, Gibson said Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, the 2014 gubernatorial candidate, Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, businessman Harry Wilson, the 2010 comptroller candidate, and John Cahill, the 2014 attorney general candidate, could beat Andrew Cuomo. Gibson also said he wrote in Maryland Governor Larry Hogan in the New York Republican presidential primary election a few weeks ago. And about probable nominee Donald Trump, he says, quote, "I'm a Christian who believes that people can evolve," end quote. Read the full story in Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Gibson will be a live guest on All Together Now at 6 p.m. May 5th on WGXC 90.7 FM, with Perry Teasdale from the Columbia Paper asking questions.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Tuesday, the third day of May 2016. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. It's time for radio news about radio waves.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
The Intercept reports that a new study from Oxford's John Penny shows evidence that the mere existence of a surveillance state breeds fear and conformity, stifling free expression. The study found 87% of Americans were aware of Edward Snowden's 2013 leaked documents about how the government spies on Americans. Since then, there has been a, quote, 20% decline in page views on Wikipedia articles related to terrorism, including those that mentioned Al-Qaeda, car bomb, or Taliban, unquote, according to the report. Quote, people are spooked or deterred from learning about important policy matters like terrorism and national security. This is a real threat to proper democratic debate, unquote, Penny wrote. This is Tom Rowe for Waveform Radio and WGXC.
All together now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia counties is looking for contributors. If you have an idea for a regular or irregular segment, or if you want to interview the public at a local event or write stories for the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org, send an email to info@WGXC.org. All together now.
Verizon's communications two major unions with 1,000 employees in the capital region began striking at 6 a.m. April 13th, and workers have been picketing daily at the Verizon store on Fairview Avenue in Greenport. Communication Workers Association 1120 from Kingston and Catskill are picketing there, asking motorists to honk in support. The union claims Verizon has failed to build out Fios in western Massachusetts and virtually all of upstate New York and many towns in Pennsylvania, while Verizon denies it hasn't lived up to its Fios construction agreements. There are 39,000 union members currently on strike, mostly in the Northeast. The last Verizon strike in 2011 lasted just 2 weeks. Representative Chris Gibson announced on Monday that he's not running for governor. He talked to Time Warner News about who Republicans might run against Andrew Cuomo in 2018, and also about his thoughts about the Republican presidential election and who he voted for in the primary.
First of all, I'm a proud Republican. I'm also an American first. And I've also viewed myself as, when you mentioned pragmatists, I'm a fiscal conservative. And fiscal conservatives are pragmatists because, you know, when you spend more money than you're taking in, you're not solving problems, you're creating them. So I'm proud of my record, and as you point out, I have been successful in bringing people together. Look at that last election. I'm in a Democratic-leaning district. President Obama carried it twice, and yet, even though I was outspent 2-1, we won by 30 points. So I think it's very possible to have a Republican who comes with a common-sense, integrious position, and then works to bring people together. With regard to the national piece of it, look, I mean, this is a very important election. When I look at 2016, I don't plan on voting for Hillary Clinton. I certainly want to and plan to support our candidate.
Yeah, but what if your candidate is Donald Trump? You're going to vote for Donald Trump?
Well, I hope to be inspired. I'm a Christian who believes that people can evolve. And look, he hasn't earned my support yet, but I'm hopeful that whoever our candidate is, that I'll be able to support that candidate. And let me say this. That certainly I've taken issue with all the candidates, and I've done interviews where I've explained the remaining three, the problems. I had to write somebody in. My integrity, I mean, I felt I needed to write somebody in.
In the Republican primary that just passed.
I did.
Who was it? Can you
Larry
tell us?
Hogan, who's the governor of Maryland.
Not even a New Yorker.
Well, look, I'll tell you what. He's a cancer survivor. He is somebody who won in a blue state, who's trying to bring common sense and fiscal conservatism to that state, which I think clearly we need at the national level. But let me say this about Donald Trump. I've talked about all three of them, but, you know, look, there are some things that I think he is helping. Where there's a fight for the soul of my party,
there
of the Republican.
There has been for several cycles
I'll
now.
Just tell you what, my record reflects this, and I have been an advocate for changing the perspective of our party on issues of peace through strength. You take a look at, you know, I'm a big believer in what Ronald Reagan did for our country, peace through strength. You have a strong military, and then you lead with diplomacy. And unfortunately, for the last 15 years, our party has been captured by neoconservatives. Mm. And neoconservatives are not conservative. I mean, that's why they call them neoconservatives. There's nothing conservative about it. All war all the time. So to the extent that Donald Trump has tried to change that, I appreciate. And let me also say on trade, I certainly believe in trade. I'm proud of what our producers, manufacturers produce. But I'm not for bad trade agreements. And, you know, remember these votes I took. I was one of a handful of Republicans that was opposed to and still is opposed absolutely to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and also voted against, like, arming the Syrian rebels. So I will say this. Donald Trump is late coming to this fight that I've been fighting, leading on the soul of the Republican Party.
Shoot. the Caro Town Board debated a solar moratorium at a public hearing on Monday, May 2nd. First, Town Supervisor Dan Benoit introduced the measure and why he thought it was necessary. Former Town Supervisor John Coyne, who has plans for a solar array on his own property, then responded. We also hear from Town Attorney Tal Raplia, Supervisor Benoit again, and then finally former Supervisor Coyne speaks again.
Basically, it's the town board's understanding that there are a lot of companies called ESCOs that are going around and looking for places that they can put these solar farms on private property. When the town did its zoning law, it did not address these private solar farms. And there are a lot of fly-by-night companies that are running around and causing problems with a lot of people, tying up their property in very onerous leases that people can't get out from under. They have trouble selling their property, all sorts of issues with these things. So we decided that the best thing that we could do right now was to put a moratorium on the ability for these companies to come in and lease land and put these solar farms down until we can address this in the revised zoning law that is going to be worked on here. So that being said, we have this proposed law to put this 12-month moratorium on these solar farms, and part of the process, of course, is to have a public hearing on the matter, and that's what we're open for here tonight. So that being said, is there any questions or public comment regarding the proposal to stop these for 12 months? Yes, sir.
Does this affect the county project over?
It does not affect the county project or the project that the town is working on at this time. It wouldn't affect any government project they are exempted from.
Yeah. Is there an increase, and Tal, correct me if I'm wrong, with a moratorium, you have to show an increase in people coming forward and applying for applications for a particular use. And in this situation would be a solar farm. Years ago, we tried to implement a moratorium on resorts going into apartments. We didn't have enough resorts that were going into become apartments, so we couldn't pass a local moratorium. Now, how many people have actually applied to the building department for this?
Not for a farm.
None.
No, they're all private.
All private. So how can the town, if this law is still in place, how can the town implement a moratorium if there's not an increase in, I'll say, demand, you know, on the building department? I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
We don't want, you know, this to become a big issue and have it out of control. But on the other hand, is it really fair to people that have done their homework, have chosen a reputable dealer, and want to move forward with it?
Well, there's sort of a two-stage question and answer there. And the first part of it is that it's not necessarily that it's applications that have come for the town, but rather the fact that we know that these entities are out there, and that therefore that's the reason why the board has chosen to go in this direction. The second point is how can it be fair to those that have chosen reputable companies and are prepared to move forward? And within the law itself, there is a variance application that can come in. So if somebody feels that they have good cause, they can apply to the board for a variance to be able to go forward with their application.
One of the things that brought this to the forefront was a discussion that I had last month, or about almost 2 months ago now, with the town of Durham supervisor Bill Carr, and we have that meeting, once a month meeting that the supervisors tend to meet, and this was a topic, a serious topic of conversation amongst all the supervisors. Was it not in Carroll? Right, we haven't had that citizens come and to get these applications in, but Durham has had them, Coxsackie has had them, a number of people have had them, and this was one of the things that they were saying. some of these ESCOs are coming and they're putting these things in, and it's actually costing the people money, where they're losing money on the proposition. And we this was something that wasn't addressed in our zoning law, and we just felt that it would be prudent for us to move forward now and stop it before any of our people got hurt by these companies. And like Tal says, if somebody has a hardship or has done their homework and wants to apply for a variance to allow them to go forward, there is a mechanism in here to allow that to occur.
And I'm just reading the announcement, if I could just interrupt you. It says, suffer an unnecessary hardship. Define unnecessary hardship. There's no definition. If I were to go to the variance board, what is your definition of suffer an unnecessary hardship? And mine could be two totally different things. It's not defined here.
Right.
So I don't think the town is really in a position yet to implement the moratorium, which I'm not saying I'm not in favor of, but I think, one, a year is too long, and two, I think this needs to be, the proposed local law needs to be fine-tuned a little bit before we go ahead and implement this moratorium.
That was an excerpt from the Caro Town Board meeting Monday, May 2nd. You can hear the entire meeting at the newsroom at WGXC.org.
All right, all together now. Ready?
Wednesday on All Together Now, we'll talk to David Little from the Rural Schools Association. He'll preview the school budget hearings that are going on now before the school budget votes on May 17th. Thursday, Representative Chris Gibson is in the Hudson WGXC studio. Perry Teasdale from the Columbia paper will help ask him questions, and you can too. Send your questions to info@WGXC or post them on the WGXC Facebook page or to the WGXC Twitter account. Friday, we'll talk to representatives from the American Dance Institute before their groundbreaking in Catskill on May 7th.
Send us an email at info@WGXC.org. Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492 to leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community.
I'm here today with Linda Weintraub and Michael Asbill. Is that the correct pronunciations of your names?
You got it.
Yes, that's good.
And you guys want to introduce yourselves? Tell listeners who you are and why you're talking to us today.
Well, my name is Linda Weintraub. I have lived in the Hudson Valley for a very long time and contributed to the art experience here in many ways, but this is the first opportunity I will not be a curator, not be a writer, not be a lecturer, but will actually be exhibiting my own work at Church Project Space, which Michael Asbill is the director of.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I'm Michael Asbill, and I am the director of Church Project Space, which is in Cottekill, New York, just outside of, well, just between Rosendale and Stone Ridge. I used to run another gallery with a couple of friends in Kingston called K-Mocha. I'm an artist and also have lived here for quite a number of years and also live on a farm here in the Hudson Valley. So it's great to be on the show.
And is the Church Project Space new?
Church Project Space is relatively new. We've been we're on a slow start. We're kind of ramping up. We've done a couple of projects each year for the last 2 years. The first set in collaboration with Women's Studio Workshop, and then two independent projects. So this will be our first full season this year.
And Linda, can you give us all the details about the show before we begin too much? When's the opening, and is there a reception and that sort of thing, and how long is the show up?
The show is based on a concept, and the concept is that as an artist, I look for ways to do what environmentalists all seem to want to do, and that is get the public back in touch with the materials and the systems and the rhythms of the environment that we live in and deviate from our immersion in constructed environments and contrived materials that we humans have done. So that is the basis of the exhibition, which means it is a participatory exhibition in which I will present a work of art that utilizes the materials that are so rich with their history of the geological and biological forces of the Hudson Valley, things like seeds and mushrooms and twigs and bark and other kinds of organic material. And this will be available for the public. So it opens on May 15th, but basically it is an ongoing project that will continue until the end of June. And the public is invited to participate anytime in that period by calling to make an appointment or coming on Sundays from 2 to 5 p.m. when it is just going to be open. And I will be there guiding this process of interaction as we go along. So Michael's space is conducive to this. As a matter of fact, it tends to be its mission, which is to involve the public in art projects. And it was perfect for my own desire to provide people with an opportunity to interact with these materials that have all been foraged from the Hudson Valley.
Well, you led into my next question perfectly. For both Linda and Michael, your past work has included participatory public works before, or is this new, or what kind of success have you had with getting the public to participate in art?
Sure, maybe I'll field that one. My personal work does sort of involve engagement. It's a big part of my practice. And when we decided to bring or put Church Project Space together, we felt like engagement was a critical component. We wanted to see audiences diversified, drawing more from the general populace than we've seen in the past. Linda's project, as she said, is really perfect because she's actually planning to meet with as many people as she can and get them involved in her project in like a workshop type of way. Where they come in and they play a part in the general project. They'll help build it.
Linda, have you had past participatory works?
I have written about other people's participatory works, but I have never tried one like this myself. But I guess to complete Michael's statement about my show, there will be a culminating event at the end of the exhibition when I'm hoping all those who have contributed will gather. And actually what I hope is that people will be stopping in throughout the 6 weeks to see how the work evolves. So it's an active kind of art event, which will take place over those 6 weeks. And I think it's a little unusual in that it has of long duration. Many participatory artworks take place in an afternoon, and then people go home and don't involve themselves with it again. But here's an opportunity for them to come back and bring their friends and neighbors and perhaps people who have never even been to an art museum or an art gallery before.
Linda, what's the difference for you of instead of writing about a show or curating or putting it together to putting it on?
Actually, I was trained as a studio artist. I got my MFA degree. So the question I'm more typically asked, and this is kind of funny that you've reversed the order. Typically, people will say, how is your writing and curating a part of your studio art practice? And there my answer is, I approach everything I do based on the training I've had as an artist. So when I put on an exhibition or I write a book, I'm thinking about what am I trying to say and what is the form of communication? What are the metaphors I can use to communicate this? Who is my audience? And so I tackle all those projects as if I was doing a book that was an artwork or an exhibition that is an artwork. So here I'm just coming back home to the studio and working more directly with mediums that I have been dealing with on my homestead intensely for many years, but haven't translated that into an art exhibition before.
And how is was it a dichotomy, or is it, I don't know what the word, or I guess the word's up to you. You're trying to show people about a natural environment in a artificial environment indoors. What is the tension there?
Actually, we're hoping that a component of this will be people going out and foraging for their own materials. But what they're going to experience when they come inside is really an art experience. Because I asked myself, what can I do as an artist to encourage people to reconnect with this abundant and diverse world of matter that is so little a part of contemporary lives? And form and color and texture is definitely a part of that. So what I'm going to be presenting is not just the opportunity to interact with acorns and bark and fur and feathers, but to arrange them in a manner that is inherent to the way that the seasons change, weather conditions are altered, lighting changes from morning to noon to night, which is always a gradual progression. It is very harmonious without any divisions and boundaries and borders, which is exactly the kind of visual experience that humans, when they construct their own environment, give us. So it's completely the opposite of the right angles and the harsh contrast, which is so much a part of the commercial, commodity-driven advertising world. And it's an opportunity to use these materials in a manner that captures the aesthetics of the outdoors.
And what is the name of the show? Did we mention that?
I've given it a name, and this too says, it was in response to my question to myself, what can I do as an artist to communicate something that so many environmentalists are trying to accomplish? And I said, well, I have at my disposal as an artist the opportunity to work with metaphor. So I have created a metaphor as the title of the show, and that is not Mother Earth, but Grandmother Earth. And if I may tell you, just that, consider the Earth Mother, it means that we are dependent on her, that she will be our provider, that we are not responsible for her, and it casts us perpetually as children who are dependent. But just by putting the grand in front of mother, I'm hoping it will trigger a whole different set of associations, and that is grandmother Earth is not as vigorous as Mother Earth. She will need our help, our consideration, and we will be rewarded for assuming that responsibility because she also has great wisdom.
Michael, can you give us the details of the, where the gallery is, and tell us too about any other shows coming up?
Sure. Church is at 167 Cottakill Road, in Cottakill, which, as I said, is right between Rosendale and Stone Ridge. If you just look up that address and put it in your phone, I imagine you can sort of drive right to us.
And what's the web address too?
The web address is www.churchprojectspace, and that's CHRCH. There's no U there. CHRCH Project Space, all one word, .org. So you can find out about our shows there. In addition to Linda's show, we'll also be showing the work of Steve Chlorfine. I should say we're actually going to be having a project by Steve Chlorfine and a project by Wayne Montecalvo later in the summer. We're also arranging right now our fourth show, which is by Moira Williams, which will happen in the fall.
And your shows are more happenings and events than they are typical art?
Yeah, there's always a culminating event where people can come out and really appreciate what the artists have been doing in that space. But ultimately, our intention is to sort of bring as many people in the space and have them be active participants in the artwork that's being produced. So that's really our underlying mission, involvement. We really want to see the community involved.
And Linda, do you have a website people can go to for more information about your work?
Sure. It's www.lindaweintraub.com. And I just want to use this opportunity to issue an invitation to whoever might be listening to participate. The project depends on lots of people from lots of different backgrounds coming through, and everybody is welcome.
Do people need to be prepared in any way to participate, or?
What I'm asking everybody to call me first at my email address or my telephone, all of which is posted, and I will talk to them about exactly what they want to do. So I'm happy to tailor the visit to their needs and their interests. I'm hoping that people will organize their own groups, come with their own friends, and this can be church groups or gardening groups or art gathering groups or salons or whatever it might be. And so that will depend. If they want to do foraging, then we need to come dressed for foraging. If they want to do an indoor project only, then of course that would require no special dress at all.
And again, this is at the Church Project Space from May 15th to June 30th?
Correct.
And what are the hours?
Well, it's totally dependent on these sort of... let me start that over. It's totally dependent on the workshops. We'll be open during the times when Linda's there providing workshops. But every Sunday from 2 to 5, Linda will be available there, you know, leading workshops for the general public.
One thing that hasn't been said is that the Church Project Space earned its name well because, Michael, do you want to tell its history? It is a little church.
Oh, yes. It's an old Dutch Reformed church that was built in 1898. I think it was decommissioned 30 or 40 years ago, has been in artists' hands since then. As far as I know, we're on the third artist owner. It's a fabulous little 850-square-foot space, just tiny, little single-room church, cleared completely out, has these beautiful, modest stained glass windows, 11-foot ceiling. So it's like a perfect size, perfect space for a project of this scale.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael Asbill from the Church Project Space, a director of the Church Project Space, and Linda Weintraub, whose show Godmother Earth opens May 15th there.
Absolutely. And Grandmother Earth, yes.
Oh, Grandmother Earth. Did I say Godmother Earth?
Yes, but that's good, too.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community. The national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Taking a look at what's making news today, the Supreme Court backs away from a minimum raise challenge, working women want their struggles addressed by candidates, and Americans are encouraged to rediscover the joys of being unplugged. At the top of the list, the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in for the first time Monday on a $15 an hour minimum wage, a move workers' advocates say signals the court does not plan to stop the movement that's spreading across the country. The justices refused to hear a challenge to Seattle's law, which franchise owners said discriminates against them by treating them as large businesses. It comes as several other cities and a group of states, including California and New York, have started to phase in a $15 minimum wage in recent months, as the cost of living keeps rising. And on the topic of wages, working women around the nation are speaking out about the struggles they face and the importance of the November election in elevating and addressing those issues.
Liz Schuler is the National Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. She says because women represent 40% of breadwinners nationwide, it's time for political leaders and candidates to take their issues seriously.
When they're bringing home less money, or if they're having to make a choice between going to work sick or caring for their family, then that affects the economic reality of not just the woman who's working, but the entire family. Who's talking about raising the minimum wage? Who's talking about making sure women are paid fairly? Who's talking about paid leave and making sure that people aren't going to work sick and having to grapple with how to take care of their families?
The AFL-CIO conducted a survey of 25,000 working women nationwide to determine which issues matter most to them, and found that equal pay and coping with multiple demands on their time rose to the top. I'm Mona Shand reporting.
Indiana's presidential primary stands alone today. In the state's Democratic contest, Hillary Clinton leads Bernie Sanders by just 4 points, 50% to 46%, according to recent polls. On the GOP side, Donald Trump gets support from 49% of likely Republican primary voters, followed by Ted Cruz at 34% and John Kasich at 13%. Tenants' rights advocates are criticizing a bill getting its first hearing in the California legislature today. Suzanne Potter reports it would force renters who are contesting an eviction to deposit their monthly rent in an account with an attorney.
Assembly Bill 2312 would guarantee that money is set aside to pay the landlord while the trial proceeds. Larry Gross with the Coalition for Economic Survival, an advocacy group, claims the bill, introduced by Assemblyman Mike Gatto, was actually written by the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles.
It will make it more difficult for tenants to defend themselves against evictions. It sort of sets up a pay-for-play situation.
The Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles says the bill simply requires residents to post unpaid rent as a good faith pledge to end the dispute quickly. Today's 9 a.m. hearing in the Assembly Judiciary Committee is the first for this legislation at the state capitol.
As hydraulic fracturing expands around the nation, some communities are fighting back against the practice. But in Colorado Monday, the state Supreme Court sided with the oil and gas industry
over bans on hydraulic fracturing.
The Colorado Supreme Court struck down two measures on Monday passed by Fort Collins and Longmont voters to limit fracking. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association had petitioned the court to overturn the city laws, arguing state regulations trump municipalities, and the justices agreed in a unanimous decision. Lauren Petrie with the group Food and Water Watch says the ruling puts industry interests above Coloradans' constitutional right to defend their lives and safety.
It's disappointing, and it deals a devastating blow to Coloradans across the state that have now been stripped of their fundamental right to protect their homes, their families, their health, their air, and their water.
Petrie points to a recent study by the group Physicians, Scientists, and Engineers for Healthy Energy linking fracking to higher incidences of cancer, birth defects, and water and air pollution. The Colorado Petroleum Council welcomed the court's decision, saying it would put a stop to arbitrary bans that could impact state and local economies. The group also claims the state is already regulating safe oil and gas development. I'm Eric Galatis.
With all the smartphones, tablets, computers, and video games around, it's easy to forget there is life beyond a screen. As Veronica Carter reports, it's Screen Free Week, a time to rediscover some of the joys of being unplugged.
Josh Golan with the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood says turning off screens can shift the focus to more engaging activities, which can improve well-being and relationships.
We want to get people to stop looking at those screens and start looking at each other because we have so much to offer each other.
While the idea of having their children go screen-free might send some parents into a panic, Golan says they might be surprised with the result.
Kids are much more imaginative at coming up with activities than we give them credit for these days. So if we can start to break that habit as the second we're bored, we reach for the tablet or we turn on the video game system, we'd be amazed at the ways that kids can entertain themselves.
Excessive use of screens is linked to attention problems, poor school performance, sleep problems, and emotional difficulties among children.
And while encouraging kids to go outside is important, medical experts say it's also crucial to encourage safety. The CDC says despite improvements in playground safety and design, playground-related brain injuries have risen significantly in the U.S. over the last decade. Monkey bars, playground gyms, and swings were the pieces of equipment cited most often in connection with these head injuries, and about two-thirds of the injuries occurred at schools and recreational sports facilities. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour, broadcasting live every weekday morning at 8 here on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Philip Gray, one of the contributors to All Together Now. Listen to Democracy Now! In the morning and All Together Now! In the evening, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m., featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported, hands-on radio.
Democracy Now! At 8.
All Together Now! At 6 p.m.
Here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The rain is supposed to continue through the weekend. Wednesday morning showers are likely with a high near 56. Showers continue Wednesday night with a low around 43. Thursday, another chance of showers with a high near 59. And again Thursday night with a low around 45. Chance of showers Friday with a high near 61. It's a rainy week in WGXC land. This is Tummer with the WGXC Community Calendar surveying events in the Hudson Valley and Capital Region. We ask listeners to contribute their own events. Just go to the WGXC calendar at WGXC.org and you can copy and paste the information about your event, and soon folks like me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Wednesday, May 4th, there's an American Red Cross blood drive the Hudson High School from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Catskills School Board meeting is Wednesday, May 4th at 6 p.m. Hudson has public meetings. The Youth and Aging Committee meets at 6 p.m. and the Arts and Entertainment Tourism Committee meets at 6:45 p.m. at Hudson City Hall Wednesday, May 4th. Prattsville has a public hearing in front of its planning board at 6:30 at the Prattsville Town Hall. And Ghent on Wednesday, May 4th has a public hearing in front of its planning board. That's at 7 p.m. at the Ghent Town Hall. Wednesday, May 4th, the Jewett Zoning Board of Appeals meets on an area variance at 7 p.m. And Valencia has a public hearing before its planning board meeting at 7 p.m. at the Martin H. Glynn Municipal Building in Valencia, Wednesday, May 4th. Lots going on Thursday, May 5th in the area. There is an American Red Cross blood drive at the Columbia Green Community College from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also, the 65th National Day of Prayer Observance is at the Greene County Courthouse at noon, Thursday, May 5th. Hudson has a public hearing about a local law designating a zoning district with hotels along the waterfront area. That's at 4 p.m. at Hudson City Hall. Caro has a town planning board meeting Thursday, May 5th at 6 p.m. Caro Durham School Board meets at 7 p.m. Thursday, May 5th. Austerlitz has its planning board meeting Thursday, May 5th. Stockport has its town board meeting at 7 p.m. Thursday, May 5th. Chatham has a special meeting Thursday, May 5th with a presentation from an engineer about the Albany Turnpike traffic signal on Route 295 intersection. That's at 7 p.m. at the East Chatham Firehouse. Friday, May 6th, events in the area. Pre-Mother's Day plant and gift sale is at the Temple Israel of Catskill from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday. Also, the Greenville Drive-In reopens for the season Friday, May 6th. They have a music performance from South African singer Vuyo Sitashi, and they're also showing Breakfast at Tiffany's. That all begins at 5 p.m. at the Greenville Drive-In. Events for Saturday, May 7th in the WGXC listening area. Coxsackie has a cleanup from 9 a.m. to noon at the Coxsackie Riverside Park. Bring gloves and garden tools, rakes and pruners. Basilica hosts its farm and flea spring market at the Basilica Hudson Saturday, May 7th and Sunday, May 8th, with farmers, collectors, artisans, and more selling wares at the Basilica Hudson this weekend. There's a cleanup at the Middle Ground Flats along the Hudson waterfront. That's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., organized by the Hudson Sloop Club. The Hudson Children's Book Festival is Saturday, May 7th. That's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hudson High School. Rip Van Winkle Wine and Cheese Festival is on the other side of the Hudson River from noon to 5 p.m. at the Catskill Point. The American Dance Institute has its groundbreaking May 7th in Catskill, the former Dunn's Building Supply building along Catskill Creek. In Greenville, the Big Eye Gallery has an opening for its barn show with James Coe, Judith Warren, Deanna Schrell, Beth Schneck, and others. The show runs through May 31st. Gil Gutierrez and Bob Stern perform Saturday, May 7th at Opus 40 from 3 p.m. to 5 on violin and guitar. The 6th Annual Troy Bike Rescue Bike Fest is at the Sanctuary for Independent Media at 5 p.m. Saturday, May 7th. And the Here and Now Jazz Quintet performs at Gallagher's 5th Annual George B. O'Neill Tribute Concert. That's at 7:30 p.m. in Cairo at Gallagher's, Saturday, May 7th. You can read more information about all these events at the WGXC Community Calendar online at wgxc.org.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Song of the Day Tuesday comes from Lily Konigsberg, who performs at the Half Moon in Hudson. This is Kiss the Mime from Lily Konigsberg, performing with Palm, Tuesday, May 3rd at the Half Moon in Hudson.